on tour and you need to cut your merch guy or your driver, who do you cut?
I would say the driver, just because bandmates can like switch off and like take turns driving, that sort of thing. But a merch guy is like very hard to replace, you know? Like, if you're going to be performing, like, you need someone there.
Yeah, and I suppose, like, you can't just... Yeah. I would always think, like, I suppose it'd be weird. I don't know if people... Do people steal band merch? Like, it feels like a weird thing to steal.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, like, I really love this band, so I'm going to steal their merch. Like, it feels like a weird thing to do. So I feel like it would be safe. Like, I think you could just leave the merch at
yeah,
the table.
I don't know. I guess it would be kind of counterintuitive to like support a band and then steal their stuff. I know there's a lot of like counterfeit merch.
Do you see the thing that Malevolence did where there was a load of like counterfeit merch or like, you know, outside a venue in somewhere in Europe, I think. And then they like basically printed the tee that like the counterfeit, you know, they like made their own version of it. It was just like a green shirt with the Malevolence on the front, you know.
That's so funny.
And then they went and like did a, you know, a run of them, which is pretty cool. Yeah,
I love that.
Smart, like, what's it, getting ahead? Yeah, proper like entrepreneurial mindset. That their whole like merch setups, they've got like a whole, I feel like they've got like a whole merch company going on. It's pretty impressive, that stuff.
Yeah, merch is like a huge part of just like a band's like image and stuff. Like even coming up with merch for like this last single I put out, like, you know, you really have to think like, how do I want to represent, you know, what I'm doing on people's clothes when they go out.
Yeah, it's a weird, like, I know I saw Kian, you know, Kian Hushman, his idea with the merch was to kind of not look like metal band merch,
right?
From my understanding, which is kind of, you know, because there's a lot of like metalheads out there that just don't, you know, not really, they don't necessarily want to dress in the stereotypical metalhead kind of way. So I guess it makes sense.
I took inspiration from his merch for sure. I like that very like minimalist kind of clean thing. I think he does that really well.
I saw a take on minimalism the other day about how it's kind of, it was quite a negative take, how it's sort of destroying a lot of detail. You know, if you look at like simple things, just like architecture and sort of planning, you know, how things have gone from these, especially here in the UK, where we've got these like old buildings, you know, very ornate like things that they're quite fancy and very intricate, and then now it's just like squares and triangles, and it's all very geometric and minimalist. And there's kind of the argument that it's killing a lot of the kind of beauty in just day to day life. You know, but it's not just in like city planning, it's in, you see minimalism in loads of stuff. Where are you on the minimalism thing? Are you a fan?
Yeah, I saw a debate on this on Facebook and I kind of chimed in with my thoughts on it.
Maybe we were debating each other on some like under some weird usernames.
the way I see it is like it's trying to express something different, and it's a different character to something, you know, like if you're going for a minimalist kind of aesthetic, you're usually going for something like very sleek and bold and sort of stripped down. And that's like an artistic choice. And I just see it as like another artistic choice. It's kind of like, you know, ambient music that's very like simple versus like something really complex, like a metal song or something. So I just kind of see it as like another way of expressing art. And it's just a different kind of character that is newer, and you know, naturally people are going to be opposed to it. I do see the argument with it feeling kind of sterile. But, you know, it's just like an artistic choice, like any other style. So I kind of just see it like that.
Yeah, I think these things come in waves, don't they? What will probably happen is we'll go minimalism for ages, and then some designer out somewhere will just come out with this crazy ornate thing, and everyone will be like, oh, maybe we should do that again. And it'll probably...
Yeah, I mean, look at like the trends with like, you know, all gray appointments everywhere, like all of that. That was so trendy for a while, like gray floors, gray walls. And now people are kind of seeing it as like dated. And now the trend is like natural wood balanced against like clean, like whites and neutrals. Like I pay attention to that stuff. I think it's interesting.
I've noticed you've got a very, you're sort of, in terms of the rankings of musicians' aesthetic Instagram pages, you're definitely high up on the list. Like mine's pretty, you know, it's fine. Like this is my corner. This is my like music corner. But do you have like an interest in obviously in the kind of the visual side of things, sort of photography, videography? Like, what do you think draws you to the visual stuff?
Yeah, I think it's just being able to learn photography and videography, you really get to control the way your image is put out and get to make it like exactly how you want it. And I find just a lot of like freedom in that personally. It's not like, you know, this looks really nice and I'm trying to impress everyone with how like cinematic it looks. It's just like, for me, I love being able to have that control over like, you know, how I make things look and like the sort of image I want to put out. Yeah, it's just nice having that sort of freedom. Even with like my desk set up, like just kind of like getting all the cables nice and neat.
I saw you post that,
just like little things. Like it helps me feel more like calm and relaxed when I'm in a space like that, as opposed to somewhere that feels like kind of messy and cluttered. So I don't know. It's just little things like that I find pleasure in doing, you know.
Yeah, man, you would hate to see my desk right now.
Especially, no judgment.
Yeah, like especially, well, because of with the podcast, like I do guitar lessons and I have the camera kind of like in a different spot because it doesn't make sense. Obviously, I can't teach a guitar lesson like this. So I have to like shift everything around, and it's just there's just cables and guitar picks and pens and a capo and a random lamp that I showed you earlier, just in the middle of the room, cables everywhere.
It takes work. Like I remember I went through for like hours figuring out cable management for the setup I have now. I must've went through like 40 to 50 cable ties and like broke my brain trying to figure out how to make everything work. So I'm really happy I got it to a place where it doesn't look like spaghetti everywhere.
That kind of element of control in life, is that like an important, you know, some people in a very sort of free, you know, just sort of go where the wind takes them, kind of sort of free spirited in that way. And then other people are very sort of want control of everything in life. Where do you think you are on that sort of spectrum? Like, what's it like
in
your world?
I think artistically, I really appreciate having that control. Like being able to produce and mix my own stuff and just, you know, being able to figure out exactly how I want it to sound on my own. There's like a lot of, comfort in doing that. And same with like, you know, the aesthetic choices, like that sort of thing. I would say in life in general, I'm able to say like, okay, these are things that are out of my control and, you know, therefore they're not worth worrying about as much, like trying to change that. And then the things I do have control over, you know, it's kind of like, how can I make the most of those things? If that makes sense.
Yeah, I was, because I was doing the usual sort of look through what you've been up to in the last sort of year or so. And there's a few interesting things that popped up to me. And I saw you cover, you covered the end of It's Dying Star, isn't it? The Periphery song. You did a sort of cover at the end.
Yeah.
And you're saying how sort of you took something away from the message of that kind of song, or that it, and I think I love that the big sort of, what's it, the chant kind of vocal at the end where you've got like everything, you know. I think that's a really great sort of bit. But like what was it that sort of, what did you take away from that? Like what kind of what did that kind of, I don't know what the sort of question is, how did that kind of inspire you, or like how did that resonate with you, I guess?
Yeah, so that part of the song is like, I think that song in general is kind of about like meditation and like how important it is to just take time for yourself and like breathe and slow down. And it's really not like a message that you hear a lot, especially in heavier music. So to have it resonate like that, especially with all like the gang vocals in it, like to have this message, like take space, like you're not alone, like slow down, that kind of thing, like, it was just very powerful to hear. And like Spencer's like one of my favorite vocalists too. So I just like wanted to cover that part. Cause I appreciate that message, that focus on like mental health and just taking the space you need. It's not something that's talked about enough or sang about enough. So
yeah,
felt like, good.
It's a sort of take a chill pill kind of, mm-hmm. but more profound than that. Yeah, it's an interesting kind of message. Like, normally it's very often that the message is, here's how I feel about something, and in the hope that whoever's listening will resonate with how I feel. But actually, that's that song, I guess, is saying, this is how you could feel, you know, which is an interesting spin. Like, you don't often have it that normally it's just like someone expressing how they feel about something, and you've just got to figure out if that works for you, you know.
Right.
Whereas I think it's kind of interesting that they, I'm just going off of what you said, and I know roughly the lyrics, I guess. So that's just my imagine. Chat to one of the guys, they're like, no, dude, it's not about that. Okay. No, I thought it was good. Well, it's like every Red Hot Chili Peppers song. I used to like, I absolutely love the lyrics and sort of Kiedis's lyrics. And then as I got older and I found out every song is about drugs, I'm like, oh, okay.
You mean snow isn't about like the winter time?
Yeah. I genuinely I didn't know at the time. I was just like,
yeah, there's no way to know if you're. If you're young.
Yeah, he likes you know, yeah, he likes snow. Who doesn't? Yeah. Yeah. It'd be worrying. I wasn't that young when I started listening to Chili Peppers, but yeah. Well, so speaking of like periphery, you've got your wacky laser sounds involved. What's it kind of like having a sort of a stamp on a band that obviously means a lot to you?
I mean, it's kind of surreal. Like, I just sent Misha those patches just on a whim, just like, hey, like, you know, check this out. It might be cool. And, you know, to realize that they actually ended up using them like on the album and like I had some sort of effect on that is like definitely pretty surreal. And it's just like, you know, I'm humbled by it for sure. Cause like I'm just in my room like making like these stupid sounds on the Axe FX and like just trying to like, you know, have fun with it, and you know, it's just really crazy hearing it in context. So I think he used like some of my patches and then some of Greg from Car Bomb's patches, which are just like on a whole other level. You know, I was listening through the stems of some of the tracks on there and I can hear like where my patches are and then Greg's, and they're insane. Like I'll hear them and have no idea how to replicate it, you know. I want to get some of those patches too.
Yeah, you guys like evolving Axe FX patch, like, you know, pass it on sort of like thing where you get theirs back and then you can just fuck around with it and send them another one. Like
yeah,
oh, go on.
Yeah, it's great, like just being able to send someone something like that, and it's like a very complex chain and there's a lot going on and you can just load it up in like 2 seconds.
yeah. What's the obviously a lot of the kind of tones you go for and the musical stuff that you kind of do is quite, it deviates quite far from the traditional guitar sound, even in like heavier music. What kind of what is it that drew you to that in the first place, or what continues to draw you to like less conventional? Like, you know, some of the riffs, the stuff you're doing is somewhat recognizable, you know, a metal guitar player would be like, I know where we're at with this, but then the tones that you put over that is like, oh, this is, you know, this is not something I've heard before. what brought you there and what keeps you there? Like,
so I think it's two things. It's like my interest in like dubstep and EDM, like those kind of sounds. Cause for a while, like before I even heard of like the band Car Bomb or like any of those laser sounds, I was basically trying to like make my guitar sound like, you know, Skrillex style, like dubstep sounds and like growls and squeals, like all of that. So when I did discover Car Bomb, it was like, oh, like I can really push this further than that. So I basically just tried to replicate those sort of sounds on my own. And I got like kind of close, like it's not quite at that level, but, I definitely took a lot of inspiration from Car Bomb for those sort of sounds. And then like, you know, using ring mods as like an octaver, that sort of thing. I think, you know, that's been around in like funk music for a while, like getting that kind of gritty sort of low octave sound. So I just wanted to apply it to like distorted guitars. And it's a really fun trick.
Is it harder to mix than like conventional metal guitar stuff?
I would say using the octaver tone on it makes it a lot easier to blend with bass, and makes it sort of gel together better. With the laser stuff, like, I'm using heavy compression on guitars, and I also love OX Sound Soothe to sort of like hit any resonances that like really pop out. So I'm able to sort of keep things under control, even when it sounds like insane.
Yeah. What would be like, say, you know, I'm pretty rookie when it comes to mixing guitars. Like, I know some of the basics. What would you, you know, if I came to you and I had a DAW and like the stock plugins, nothing fancy, or maybe I had like, you know, $30 or whatever to spend, or you know, a bit more if there's something on sale, I can get like one plugin. What would be your, like, you know, sort of starter pack, like order of things to do? If I said, here's my guitar, I've got a good guitar tone, like forget the amp or anything, just purely on the mixing side of things, assuming the source tone's pretty good, what would be your like starter pack?
Yeah, sure. So I think the first place I start with any guitar tone I get like in a mix is, you know, figure out where the low and high end needs to be cut in order to sit right in the mix. A lot of the times you don't need a lot of the low end, that comes like just from a raw guitar tone. So, you know, by cutting some of that out, you leave a lot of room for the bass and the kick drum, all that. And then in the high end, you really don't need the top end of things. You know, that's like where you want like the shine of the vocal and like the shimmer on your cymbals. So a lot of the times that'll get covered up anyway in a mix. So I'll start there, and then I'll try to find like resonances that come just naturally from miking up a guitar cab. So you'll have these sort of whistly tones in like the upper mid range, and I'll just kind of find those and notch them out. I use FabFilter Pro Q 3 for a lot of that, because it can sort of highlight those notches really easily. So I'll just sort of pull them down. And then after that, it's like using like just multiband compression on like the chugs, the palm mutes. I think Logic has like a built-in like multiband compressor that can do that sort of thing. And then just overall compression on the whole tone is sort of the bread and butter of like most of the guitar tones I do. Logic's built-in compressors are actually really good too. Definitely do not want to discount them for third-party plugins.
I did a day in the studio with a sort of producer friend of mine, and I just said, I want to do a day. If I've got a demo like here, can we? I plugged my PC in. I was like, can we just with stock plugins? I bought a few plugins that I thought would be useful. We did actually end up using some, so I guess I picked somewhat okay. And just said, like, you know, can we just get this in a day with you sort of teaching me along the way a little bit? Where can we take this? And the thing that kind of amazed me was how the stages of compression worked. Like I said, like I gave him a version. I was like, this is my best guess. You know, I showed him everything I did, and I was doing these massive moves, you know, not like ridiculous, but there's, you know, big scoops out and big, like, and I think I had the right sort of idea with some of it, you know. It's funny listening on my monitors and going to hit like his $4,000 monitors and like, Jesus, that sounds so bad. I said to him, I was like, I would not have mixed it like that if I was in this room, because that sounds terrible. You know, like I was painfully aware of how bad it sounded there. But like how, you know, he just compressed a little bit, and then there'd be another thing, and then another compressor, and then there'd be a compressor in that like bit over there. And you're like, where does this all, how do you know, you know, you got like 5 or 6 stages of compression all the way through that the guitar is going through. Like, how do you know what each bit is meant to be doing? Like, how do you figure that out? I don't even know.
Yeah, I think part of that comes from knowing the character of different compressors and like what you're trying to add specifically, as opposed to just like throwing a lot at it. It's like, okay, what am I trying to control here? Like, am I trying to control like the front end transient response? Am I trying to add some more sustain and bloom to the sound? And if you're using a lot like that, it's just like little moves throughout that sort of get you to the finished product. Generally, that's not the way I work. I like just kind of slamming guitars, like heavier guitars. I have like the Waves API 2500 plugin. So Taylor Larson has this setting that he does that makes the front end like really pop, and I just use those most of the time on like heavier sounds. But for like crunchy and like clean guitars, there's definitely more nuance that I want to use on things like that. So I'll usually have a few stages of compression in that case.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of like metal bands particularly, and well, Peripheries is kind of an example with the new album, moving towards a slightly more natural sort of balanced sound than like, than ironically, than maybe Periphery were kind of pioneering with like P2 and P3 kind of stuff, you know, where it was like very, it feels very neat, you know, not in a bad way at all, but like I feel like listening to the latest stuff, it sounds like they've moved towards, and I'm sure I've heard it in other bands and just generally in music, where I feel like people are a bit too used to the perfection side of things and actually just want to hear a bit more.
Yeah.
Just like life in there, you know. What do you think, what sort of direction do you think this production stuff is going in terms of, you know, totally, you know, like precision cuts and everything versus, you know, total raw sort of audio files? Where are we falling in that like balance, do you think?
Yeah, I think more in like the later 2010s, there's this huge focus on like, okay, everything has to be perfect. Like we have to cut all the silences, like no pick attack. Like, you know, you hear that on a lot of different like deathcore and like metalcore albums that came out around that time. And I think, you know, within the last few years, there's 100% been a shift toward a more natural sound. And I think it's going to continue to progress that way. Even comparing P5 to like P3, like not that big of a difference in between those. And I feel like they're really good markers of like the way music sounds at that time. Like taking like P1, like the way that's edited and like cut up versus like P5 now, where, you know, they'll leave in some more, you know, like mess ups and like little noises here and there, and like the drums will feel a lot more natural and warm. I like that there's more of a focus now on like nailing the source tones, especially with drums, you know, just getting really good drum sounds off the bat and not having to do as much work later on. I love that way of thinking. And I think it's going to continue to progress in that way, where people are just going to become less reliant on like editing and chopping things up and more reliant on just like nailing the takes and like nailing the source tones.
Yeah, I that's another thing where I remember talking to this producer friend where like he was talking about, I can't remember when it was, but just the importance of just getting the tone, you know, getting it right. Because what was happening was I was obviously making, like I said, making these big sweeping changes. This would have been a while ago, to be fair, when we were talking about this. But, you know, I would naturally be just trying to carve out loads of things. And then what he would do is he'd go to the amp and go, okay, well, what, you know, or go or look at the guitar or look at like, how am I hitting the strings or things like this. Like, oh, okay, that makes sense that you've got to input the best thing you can. Like, yeah, it's interesting how I think a lot of people think you can fix, well, you can fix a lot of things in some ways, right? But yeah, it's best just not have to fix it in the first place, I guess.
It saves you work down the line.
Yeah. So what, like, in the last year or so since, well, I can't remember when it was we chatted exactly, but it's been about a year, I think, something like that.
I think about a year, yeah.
Is anything in terms of you, like personally, and you know, has anything changed or is there anything new? Obviously, life events have happened, you know, but like, is there anything? How do you feel like you're different to say you a year ago as a person? You know?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. So I, within the last year, like I moved, I have my own place now, with my girlfriend Elissa. And that's just mentally been like a really cool change, just like having more independence like that. You know, the old studio I had was in my parents' house, like that old space. And, you know, so we moved into like a two bed and I changed one of the rooms into like my studio. So like this setup now is smaller and it's like tighter. So I really have to like make good use of the space for like filming and also acoustically. So having to adapt to that has been like a really good, you know, just sort of like mental exercise, and, you know, being comfortable with two different spaces like that. And yeah, just like getting more independence in general has been really nice. I guess besides that, like things have been pretty much the same. Like, you know, work at Reverb is continuing to go well. Just staying busy, you know, on the mixing side, things have been very busy too. So it's just more of the good stuff and more good stuff too.
Yeah. What's the kind of like, you know, have you got like a 10-year plan or like some sort of idea of like where you think you'd like to be musically and career and otherwise in sort of, you know, 10 years time looking back at this podcast, you know, kind of thing?
Yeah, I think the plan is to sort of, you know, create more of my own business and, you know, become more reliant on that as opposed to like working corporate. Like, I would love to sort of do both for a while just to build that up and then eventually have my own sort of business going on. I would love to make like courses on like how musicians can get comfortable filming themselves on social media and like posting and how to market themselves, that sort of thing. I feel like there's a lot of tutorials and like video content out there on like how to actually like market yourself and the algorithm and hashtags and all that. But there's not a whole lot on like how to get comfortable in front of a camera, like how to write a script for a video, how to like edit yourself in a way that feels natural, like little things like that, that I think could be really cool to just like make some courses on and like market to musicians specifically. So I definitely want there to be more of a focus on that going forward. That's just kind of the overall general plan.
Yeah. So you've got quite like a holistic view of what you want to sort of be as a musical person, like not just as a musician, but like you got other things. I know some, so I was chatting to Kev from Alluvial, a vocalist from Alluvial yesterday. He was the one that asked your rather mean question about who you're going to cut from the... it's quite funny. The reason he sort of said the question would be quite funny is obviously some people... He didn't know who the question before, but some people might have like a really good friend who's the merch guy or the driver. And you've got to decide like, am I going to cut like my closest friend out of the tour? What are we talking about? What was I going to say about, I've blanked. What were we talking about a second ago?
Career aspirations.
Yeah. So I think we were talking about, I think it was with him anyway. We were talking about, you know, some people are quite one track minded with music. And obviously nowadays it can be beneficial, I think, to have a few things going on, like a few different things. You very much kind of, in an ideal world, do you think you would just do one thing? Would you just like mix or write songs or something like that? Or, do you actually like the variety? Where do you fall on that?
Yeah, I personally love the variety and doing just like a few different things that fit my interests, as opposed to like just mixing in like a studio, whether it's like a, you know, major label studio or like my own studio. Like, I don't want to just do one thing, especially if it's something I'm really passionate about. You know, I want to like spread that between different areas and sort of diversify in that way.
Yeah. There's with like looking at your music and stuff, obviously there's a lot of people out there who can play guitar and write cool metal tracks and that, but not many people delve into vocals. And it's something I've been toying with, and you know, I sound all right now, like I sound okay. But what kind of brought you into that? Because I feel like that's a really big, gives you a lot of freedom when you can sing, because you don't have to just like write the whole song and then give it to someone else or you know, rely on another person, that final kind of very important step, obviously, of having vocals on it. You know, obviously you can write instrumental, right? But you know, what drew you to that kind of having that? Have you always been able to sing and you just thought, oh, I guess it makes sense for me to do this? Or did you have to work on it? Like, what brought you into that?
Yeah, I learned how to sing first before playing guitar. I picked up guitar in like 2008, and I think a few years before that, I started learning like how to sing and like taking vocal lessons. You know, I still have a ways to go with on the singing side, guitar too. But you know, just wanting to do both of that early on was cool, and you know, just seeing performers do both at the same time, growing up, like you know, watching like Kurt Cobain and like you know all these songwriters who also play guitar, I thought it was the coolest thing. So I wanted to just do both together. You know, now the stuff I write, I can't play both at the same time and sing, but you know, I just always thought that combo was really cool. So yeah, that's kind of why I wanted to learn both.
Yeah, I feel like there's something I part of why I want to step into vocals is partly because I actually want to challenge myself in some way, because I kind of feel a bit nervous about the idea of singing, you know, and I kind of, it's that whole, you know, pushing yourself forward. I think it might be a good, like last night, actually, it's funny. I was sat, because I just live on my own in this flat. So, and I work from home. So if I don't make myself go out and do stuff, I just get like a bit cagey and a bit like, oh, I need to, you know, it's not like I need to just go and get drunk all the time, but like if I don't go and do something, it's not for the sake of like drinking, but there's like loads of bars where my friends go like at the weekends and stuff. And last night I was like, fuck it, I'm just gonna go there, and if I don't know anyone, I'll just chat to someone and have a drink, because I was like,
right,
it sounds a bit off topic, but I'm bringing it back. So like, because I thought, you know, I was sat in my flat and I was like, oh, there's no one. Like, I messaged a few friends and no one's about. I'm like, oh, that sucks. I was like, why don't I just go out, you know, like just me and just meet some people. And but the way I think about vocals is there's that like barrier, I think, where a lot of people are afraid to present vocals because it's very personal.
Right.
And I feel like I just need to jump that hurdle a bit like I was saying, just go, I want to go for a drink, so I'm just going to go for a drink and meet some people. I'm trying to push myself to do more things where I just feel a bit uncomfortable, but actually you get the reward out of it. I know I'm ranting a bit here, but I'm sort of bringing it back to the point of vocals is obviously quite personal. A lot of people are afraid to do it. So I'm wondering, right, if we're going to get less vocalists coming through just because people are just more afraid of being judged for singing, whether they're good or bad, you know. I don't know,
yeah,
if that's a kind of, I know I really roundabout sort of made that very much about me and then brought it back somewhere.
No, I totally see what you're saying. Like, putting yourself out there is definitely tough with vocals. You know, I'm very self-conscious of like doing live vocal stuff and posting it. And I think because there's been such a big focus on like vocal production in the last, you know, decade or so, like how to produce and tune and edit and comp all that, I think it gives vocalists more of like a cushioning sort of when they're putting themselves out there. Like it feels less scary to like be able to tune and edit something and then like mime for a video and start doing that until you're more comfortable building your voice up and then, you know, starting to really put out like live stuff. At the end of the day, it doesn't really matter like what you're putting out as long as it feels like genuine. But I think it's kind of a good like middle ground for vocalists who are really scared to put themselves out there, just sort of learning how to make their voice sound the way they want it to, like however they get there. And then, you know, transitioning to like, all right, like let's really like try to do this live and put that out there.
Yeah, it's definitely a scary thing, I think. And I think it's so hard because you're not used to hearing your own voice as well. You know, getting used to that, right, is weird. I still don't know what my voice... It's really weird. I can hear it. But I'm like, does this... Like, I've had a few people say to me that they like my speaking voice. I'm like, I don't like my speaking voice. So I don't know where this has come from. Like, so I'm kind of hoping, I guess, that my singing voice is the same, where I'm like, maybe I don't like it, but that's probably quite normal. Like, do you like your own singing voice? I know it's a bit of a weird question, but...
I strongly dislike parts of it because there are parts of my range where I get, like, more tense and I have to work through it more. But, like, generally, I've learned to get comfortable with my singing voice and I've gotten used to it over the years. I remember when I first started off, though, like in... you know, middle school or high school, like really starting to record myself more, it was super weird at first hearing myself recorded. Even just like talking too, like on, you know, Instagram, like hearing myself talking on camera was super weird at first. And it just kind of becomes more natural over time. But with singing, I think part of that is singing how you talk. There's like a lot of vocalists who like, will put on like a, you know, an accent, or people call like singing in cursive is like the big thing lately, where people will sort of change or like modify the way they naturally speak in their singing. And I try to keep it mostly the same, you know. I think that sort of helps bridge the gap.
Yeah, I like that authenticity. I'm not such a fan of, You know, have you seen the like memes about I don't know her name, the lady singing Merry Christmas, and it's like Miriam Quismois, and you're like, what are you singing? Like,
you're like, Merry Quismois.
Oh, it just cringes me out just thinking about it. Like, just hearing that in my head, I'm like, oh no. It's, yeah, yeah. I mean, like, credit, she's got a way better voice than I probably ever will have, but it's just like...
Same here.
You could have just sung Merry Christmas, and I would have probably thought it was fine. Like, Christmas singing, Christmas songs are, like, cheesy enough as it is without the need for that.
I don't know. I've never really understood, like, that kind of singing. It's been huge, like, in the pop world especially. Like, on TikTok, there are a lot of vocalists who are hearing... artists that, you know, present their voice that way and want to sort of follow it. And I think it's, I think of it as more of like a fad, like a trend, and people will start to like want something more natural.
Well, the thing I've like, something I've clocked is, so I'm the kind of, I just really like vocals that sound powerful. You know, I really like big, you know, I'm not quite into your like, you old school like sort of Dio's and like what can I remember his name, Robert Plant, you know, I like the sort of power, but that's a very classic rock kind of thing,
right?
But I really like I'm a massive Mark Tremonti fan, like all round, and I love his kind, he's got a very powerful tone to his voice, and there's not much like messing around in terms of like vocal tricks, it's just kind of quite pure, I think.
Right,
but then equally I think there's a lot in Sleep Token Man's voice, you know, in terms of like Sleep Token Man's a weird way to put it, Vessel he calls himself, doesn't he?
Yes.
And like, you know, there's lots of like sighs and little creaks into notes and little delicate nuances, and I found myself in a place where I was thinking, oh god, I don't do all of this, and I was like, do I need to? I don't know, like it sounds good when he does it, but I don't really, I think you can, by default, you can hear people doing stuff. It goes for all musicians. You know, I could listen to like a great jazz player and be like, I can't, I don't know that, or I don't do that. It's like, well, do I even want to do that? But it's easy to put yourself into the mindset of like, oh, well, I you know, I can't do what he's doing. Do you ever find yourself seeing players that do, you know, or musicians that do things that you don't do and going like, oh, I can't do that, without realizing actually you don't even, maybe you don't even want to do that, you know?
Totally. Yeah. I think what's helped me a lot with that, you know, mindset wise, is remembering that people are doing what feels natural to them. Like they're presenting themselves in a way that feels genuine to them, and just naturally, because everyone's a different person, that's going to vary from person to person. So as long as what you're putting out is genuine and, you know, feels authentic to yourself, like it doesn't really matter like what it is. Like if I see someone shredding on Instagram, like playing like crazy fast stuff, like, yeah, for a second I'll be like, wow, I want a quick guitar, like this is insane. But then I you know, I remember like that's not really like, it's not really what feels like authentic to me, you know, like I want to groove, I want to play like simpler stuff that just kind of goes hard, you know, because that's what feels right for me.
Yeah I think it's an important it's difficult because you see literally every variation of every type of player online, because it's just this, it's a big place, you know. Yeah, it's another thing, bit of a sort of segue, but another thing I've wanted to sort of chat about was, I've seen you share a lot of stuff about like the cold plunge stuff.
Yeah.
Where you've like, because I there's a guy I follow, I don't know if I'm gonna see if, actually I know if you follow, is Jordan Ferrone, is that his name? He does like an ice bath every day, and he does a little inspirational message. I don't know if you've seen him. There's another like,
I don't think so.
Oh, I have to send. He's so like wholesome. He's been doing it for like, I think like 200 and something days now. I think he's obviously trying to make it to a year. And he just every morning he does it. It's like the same video, but like you have a different little message, and it's a different day. So when he first started, I think it would have been like winter, I guess, or like going into winter, and he's in. Is it Winnipeg? I think he's in or something. But either way, like it's just, you know, brutal. Like you see the ice, he's literally breaking it with like dumbbells. But there's been a bit of a phenomenon, I guess, blowing up. I've tried some of that, and I know you've talked about it. Have you committed to like the full ice plunge? Have you done that?
Like taking like an ice bath, I've done it once, and it was like probably the most uncomfortable experience in my life. Like, I couldn't really like breathe well, because your body really tries to fight it. And it was just like very uncomfortable. So what I've been doing is cold showers every day. I do like 2 minutes of cold after like a normal warm shower. And it just like wakes me up and just makes me feel a lot more alert. So I'll do it before drinking coffee, because if I do it after drinking coffee, it like makes my heart work way too hard. So I do it like kind of first thing in the morning, and I try to like relax into it, like relax my core, relax my breathing. And it's just a really good way to like make yourself relaxed under really intense circumstances. And I always come out of it feeling like happier, which is cool. But yeah, the baths are tough. Like, showers for me are a lot easier because you're not just like submerged in it. I've had a lot of good talks about this with Matt Halpern, because he's like, you know, huge on the ice barrel, you know, ice barrel and sauna, like hot and cold, which is really cool. But he thinks the showers are trickier because you have all the water splashing around and you don't get to really like adapt your whole body to one temperature. But I find showers a lot easier. I don't know. It's interesting to see how different people experience it and connect with it.
Yeah, I've tried. I'm with Matt on that one. I've tried. So I don't know how cold. Obviously, I haven't got like a thermometer. I guess I could get one. But like, the closest I've got is like UK winter tap water temperature plus a shit ton of ice chucked in. And I did that every day for a while. But I found it would take me like 2 hours to fully feel warm again. And if I exercise straight afterwards, it's fine.
Right.
Because then you just warm up again. But I found if I just did that and then just got on with my day, I'd be sat around for genuinely like 2 and a bit hours. Like, just, I wouldn't even be cold. I'd just be like not warm for,
right,
you know. But I found it more like, it's more of a shock to the system, but it's more peaceful. Whereas the shower, you're like getting battered by cold water. And like you said, your body's not. And I don't know how cold the bath was. Like, I think in the winter particularly, it was definitely pretty cold. I don't know if we were quite getting down to like 1 degree temperatures, but that was pretty brutal. Like, that was, but I did feel good afterwards. It certainly helped with like sleep. I felt myself falling asleep more easily. You know, if I did like an ice bath early in the day, I go for a walk and then I just come back and run the tap and be like, oh, here we go again. Mm-hmm. I've got to send you, there's a couple there's a couple you might follow that they're quite good at, you know, again, quite aesthetic. You'd like it, quite aesthetic videos. Yeah. Are you going
to? Yeah, think, no, I'd love to see.
I know Matt. Yeah. Cause I've seen Matt's sharing. He's always shared stuff about the ice bath stuff. Do you follow any, do you do in the way of sort of things like sort of health and fitness and exercise? Do you kind of, do you do much in that world? Do you kind of,
I'm really like not that much like in that world. It's really only been like the cold, like Wim Hof method stuff in terms of like, you know, fitness and exercise. Like, aside from that, I'll do like jogs and like walks, but it's definitely an area where I want to like get better in and like, you know, improve how I'm exercising.
Yeah, I've definitely, it's something last 6 months or so I've worked on it loads, and you know, trying to do something every day. I have like a day off, but I feel so much better for it, like especially with the cold stuff as well. It's, even if it's a placebo, I'm sure the exercise isn't, but like, even if the cold stuff's a placebo, I'm like, I don't mind. It works for me. So like,
right.
Yeah, it's an interesting, what kind of, like, you talked about meditation with that, when we talk about the periphery song and the cold stuff, like, what kind of things do you find, what sort of mental spaces do you go to keep yourself, you know, regulated? And are there things you do to kind of look after yourself, particularly beyond these kind of, you know, like your cold showers and meditation and stuff? Like, how do you just keep yourself sort of running on an even keel?
Yeah, so like personally, I've, you know, I struggle with an anxiety disorder and also like dissociation, like sort of not feeling like I'm really here. So there's been a lot of like, you know, coping strategies and like breathing techniques that I've had to like get down in order to just like feel like okay. So it's like an area of my life that I've really like put a ton of work into. And like, there's a lot of like cognitive, like thinking strategies that I've picked up, but the breathing has always been like the first thing I turn to. I've learned to like relax my core completely. when I, you know, start feeling anxious or like stressed out, and then just sort of like breathe like slowly while keeping my like core muscles totally relaxed. And there's some interaction it has with like the vagus nerve in your body that like calms your whole system down. There's science behind it. It's really interesting. I didn't think it would have as big of an effect as it does, but that's kind of the first thing I turn to. And you know, I'll just like play guitar or like listen to music if I'm feeling stressed. So there's just a bunch of little things that I turn to.
Yeah. The thing I've been trying to fix lately is my posture. I'll wake up. I think because I've got a very tense back. I can definitely feel it. If I stretch it out, I feel so much less stressed. It feels like, oh, that's what all that stress was. It was literally like physical tension. It wasn't like a mental. Yeah, if I just stretch out, I feel the blood coming back to my brain again. I'm like, whoa,
right.
I need to fix this. Every now and again, I wake up and I've been sleeping like with my head tilted back. I'm like, what the fuck? How do I sleep like this?
It's me every night. Yeah,
like my head's like back there. Anyone listening, just got to pretend, you know, imagine what I sort of did. But you know, for like Jabba the Hutt style, like, no, just my neck just disappears. I'm like, how do I sleep? Like, how do I not just die in my sleep like that? That can't be good. So I've been trying to fix that. I've got like a little on my phone. It literally, my background is, it just says posture check. So I just, like, every time I turn my phone on now, I just sort of try and, you know, anyone that sees me out in public probably thinks I'm a bit weird, but so I got to do it because it's just, it's been messing me around.
That stuff doesn't get talked about enough. Like, I finally invested in like a great office chair. Like, I got this yesterday. It's like,
I saw you showed that.
Yeah. And it's just like a lot more supportive. Like, I hunch over a lot when I'm working. Mm. I've been hunched over this whole podcast.
Man, I think I've
like,
just,
this
I've...
whole time I've been like this. And when you said that, I kind of, you know, yeah, it's been big. Like, I hold a lot of tension in my back too. So I'm totally with you on that.
Yeah. I really want to get more into just stretching every night. I feel like I sleep better, you know, if I do it in the morning as well, just get the blood flowing. Like, it's just something that, again, I think as musicians, a guitarist, well, most musicians, to be fair, you have to sort of position yourself. If you're not careful, you end up tilting one way or leaning for, you know, it's and then obviously, you know, 40 years of that. I'm trying to get more into my exercise as well, to try and, you know, just keep myself strong in that. But another complete left field thing. You know, we talked about our mutual lookalike, Daniel Radcliffe.
Yes.
I've got to share. So I was in Venice. I've said this to someone else on the podcast now, but I had it again. You know how you said you had people say you look like him? I was in Venice on a gondola and going through the canals, and someone shouted that at me. Oh no, he said no. He was trying to be like more of a smart ass, and he was like, "You know who you look like?" I was like, "I know exactly who I look like." Like, even in Venice on a gondola, it's like beautiful, you know, like this couldn't be better. And I'm like,
that is
why
wild.
I was just like, of all the places that someone could,
global phenomena.
Yeah, I mean, he's pretty well known, isn't he? But I feel like it's just any like white guy with a beard and normal, like, like slicked over to the side, like just normal haircut, like yeah, it's not that, you know, there's a load of guys that you could say I look like, probably. There's a footballer over, as in soccer, over in this country called Joe Rowley, and he even looks quite a lot like me. I followed him on Instagram, he didn't follow me back, bastard. But I'm sure I sent him a happy birthday once. I think I said happy birthday, Joe Rowley, and he didn't respond. I just want to have this moment of like some other guy. I kind of, although it'd be, if he like becomes some super pro footballer, you know, I'm just going to get hounded because like I look quite a lot like him.
So funny.
Yeah. So there's one more thing. We talked about like coffee and stuff. I know you're big into like your cold brew, which I can't do the cold brew. Speaking of cold exposure, cold coffee just doesn't, I don't know if I just for so long associated it as a hot drink. I just don't, and I don't like coffee flavored chocolate or anything like that. So okay. I don't know what, but do you, what I feel like there's, you know, trying to sort of spin this in a more interesting kind of way, like there's a lot of specifics that go into these kind of things, and I feel like even just watching you kind of, I know you've made a couple little videos of your coffees and stuff, like it feels like you, and when you piece that together with things like your production and the aesthetics side of things, like it feels like you have a real interest in like detail and sort of like the methodology and all this kind of stuff. Like, do you think there's sort of like an analytical part of your brain that draws you to, and I know it's a real step from coffee here, but do you feel like there's that sort of side of your brain that maybe draws you to these kind of things?
Yeah, totally. I'm very like, you know, methodically oriented, and I love like just order in things in general, you know, whether it's just organization or like, you know, these are the steps to do this, and like that's how I get there. Yeah, I don't know. I just like appreciating little things like that. Like, you know, this is my daily like coffee routine. Like, yeah, here's what it is, and hopefully, you know, people find it cool. I just like sharing like little things like that. There's definitely like something special in just appreciating like the small details of someone's like day. Especially like when I get to like film it and make it like look how I want. Just being able to like show off little things that, you know, people probably find like mundane for the most part. I think there's just something like kind of special in doing that.
Yeah, I think the thing I've been with the way sort of things like AI are going, and how it's, I think it won't be long before it's AI. I mean, AI is already putting together music that is, you know, sounds pretty convincing. I think what's going to have to happen if you want to stand out as a musician is I think you have to have a story, and you have to be a human being, basically. I think, because, you know, I think if I were to, for example, go and, part of why you go to a live show is because it's human beings on the stage. You don't go because, and I think like little things like sharing your passions and that are going to become way more important in the next 10, 15 years. Because I think if you don't do that, if you don't show people what you're interested in and what makes you, you, and like little things like putting up, you know, singing, but your voice with mistakes and things and whatever it is. I think we're going to end up, you're never going to beat artificial intelligence, or certainly not in the next 20 years when it comes to this stuff. And I think there's a lot of value actually in having your sort of personality out there, if that makes sense. I don't know what your sort of take is on that, but
I mean just going about your day doing things is something that's uniquely human, you know, just like making coffee and like sitting down and organizing your desk. Like, those are physical things that people do that, you know, a computer doesn't do because it's a computer. So I think just sharing those little aspects of your life is like, you know, there's something just innately human and like fun about that. It's funny with my page, like I debated for so long whether I wanted to share stuff like that as opposed to just keeping it like a music page only. And eventually I was kind of just like, whatever, like, who cares? This is my page. Like, I'll just make it me.
Yeah. I really want to get, I've been going down the rabbit hole of seeing all these different espresso machines and like, I remember watching a video on the best kettle. I was like, I'm wasting my time at this point. Like, what am I watching? And the guy was analyzing like the flow of the water. I was like, Jesus Christ, what am I like?
Yeah, espresso is like an art in itself.
And thing is, I'm not one of those people that's that interested in the intricacy, but when I see it, I'm like, oh, actually, I'd like to try that. I want that coffee, you know. I'm not that interested. I like the aesthetics of it all, and I like the sort of but I don't know, when I see it, it's like, I bet that coffee tastes way better than my coffee. You know. So I'm like, I remember I had one in I was in Ljubljana in Slovenia, and there was a coffee shop, and I thought it was just like a normal bit upmarket, but like decent. And it was proper professional, you know, and I bought some coffee beans from there, and the guy asked what machine I have. I was like, oh, just like a cheapy one. And he's like, I said, which beans should I buy? And he basically was like, doesn't matter, just buy anything. Because obviously I don't have like a £700 machine. And the guy was just like, it doesn't matter, just buy whatever you want. I'm like, oh, great. Thanks, man.
I like cold brew because the process is very like cut and dry. Like, you literally just grind up a bunch of beans, put water in the thing. I've like, it's called a toddy. It's just like a plastic container. And then you just filter it after like 10 to 12 hours and that's it. Like, there's no real like nuance or intricacy to it. You just kind of do it.
What if you forget to make one though? Like the night before? What then?
Oh, we have a few emergency cans of cold brew that we got from the supermarket that we literally just keep in our fridge in case like we wake up and are like, oh shit, like we don't have coffee.
Oh, so you're both cold brewers.
Yeah, yeah. Like I make batches for both of us.
Ah, okay. Do you still like a hot coffee or no?
The only time I'll really drink hot coffee is like espresso after like a meal or something. For like, you know, as part of like dessert or something like that. But I generally like cold drinks more. I just like, I feel like I can taste it better when it's cold.
Yeah. Hard disagree there.
I don't know. It's a weird thing. I've just like never really connected with like hot coffee that much. But like I do like a shot of espresso or something like every once in a while. It's nice.
You could like FedEx me a cold brew, you know, like express delivery and like vacuum seal it and it should still be, hopefully it will still be cold and then I'll let you know. I'm not going to send you an espresso back. I'm sure you could get one of them.
I'll pack it with ice and send it so it arrives cold.
Yeah, can you imagine I just send you like, you just got a mug in like a bag. I'm just like, I'm sorry.
It's just burning hot properly. Liquid.
Yeah, I'll just like pour it into the bag. What a ridiculous thing to do. Oh, well. Yeah. Well, I'm glad this has gone, you know, sorry.
It should be, yeah, cold coffee is just like, it's just refreshing. Like, I like that, you know? Yeah. Like that I could just drink it and it's like a cold glass of water or something.
Yeah, I'm just always drawn to like fruity flavors if I want cold, you know, refreshing, or a beer, but that's not really that good for the morning, you know. So
not particularly.
No, it depends what kind of morning you want, I guess, you know.
True.
Yeah, yeah. If you want a morning of sort of shouting at the pavement outside, then, you know, like whatever.
Then it's perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Okay, well, now that we're talking about complete and utter nonsense, maybe it would be good to wrap up and get... So I need a question for the next... Continue the sort of question trail that I've got going.
Yes.
And an artist pick as well.
Okay. Okay.
I've had some utterly ridiculous questions since your... There's one particular question that I can't believe, but now I look back at it, I'm like, why did I should have vetoed that question.
Okay. Let's see. My question is, if you can own a pet that's like normally like a wild animal and like isn't usually like domesticated, like what would you get? And like, it has to be like a wild animal and like you have to tame it yourself.
Mm. That's pretty good. That's interesting. I don't know what I would get.
It's kind of an insane question, but. Yeah, I just think it would be fun.
Yeah, yeah. Like a great white shark.
Yeah, yeah, screw it.
Just fill your living room with water.
It's my guard shark. It's better than a guard dog.
Yeah. Can you imagine trying to rob that house? Like, gee, I did not sign up for this. Like, you're prepared for a guard dog. You got, like, treats or something, you know. Just see a great white shark in the living room, like, I'm out.
Like, the moat around the house just opens up and a shark jumps out.
Yeah.
It's way better.
Yeah. Even Mike Tyson's like, dude, that's too far. You know, like, yeah.
All right. Cool. Yeah. That's my question, though.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Nice. And then I need an artist that you want to promote to the world.
Sure. My artist pick is going to be, what was it last time? I'm trying to remember. Because my artist pick would be Holding Absence if I could pick one. Sick. And I don't know if that was my pick last time.
I don't think it was. I can't remember. I've also had so many, I can't remember. but yeah, no, they're a good, yeah, that's a good,
yeah,
good choice.
I love them. Like them, Loathe, Thornhill, like that whole scene. I've loved all that stuff. So that's my pick.
I had Faisal from, is it Faisal Faze? I don't know how you,
Faisal.
I had him on episode 50s and thing, I think. He was really cool. They're here in the UK, in Birmingham in the UK soon, actually, with Spirit Box. So I haven't got a ticket, but I'm maybe able to figure that out. So We'll find out.
Yeah,
watch my Instagram stories and see if I'm. Yeah, that breakdown at the end of New Faces in the Dark, just like.
Oh yeah.
It's in my gym playlist, and I'll just skip back a bit to do another set, just because like this is
that live. Hard. It's like if you don't want to be in the pit, like you have to be far from the pit. Like it's like back up if you don't want to be in the pit.
Yeah. Yeah, it took me a while to get into Loathe. But now I'm like, oh, I think I get it now, you know. There's some similarities with your kind of guitar tone and things like that as well, actually.
Very much an inspiration for what I do.
Yeah.
They've got some weird guitar sounds in like their last full length. They don't use like Axe FX or any of that. I think it's all like pedals into, they use like Archetype Pliny on that album.
Oh wow. Yeah, okay. That's cool. Yeah. Interesting. So also if you want to plug anything to the world for yourself, then go ahead.
Yeah, I put out a single called Shoreline a few weeks ago. It's pretty cool. If you like Loathe, Periphery, all those guys, you might dig it. It's all swung. It's the whole song is a swing groove. That's kind of like I realized kind of a lot of my songs are swung.
It's cool.
So yeah, it's fun and it's heavy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it's if you know what you like, it's, you know, it's like the guys in Periphery being like, we realized all our songs were complicated. It's like, well, you know, you like it. It's the whole point. Yeah. Sick, man. Well, thank you.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure.